offering a loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. The listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Hari Shankar from the Shri Satya Sai Central Trust. And we are here to begin a new discourse this week. Those of you who have been following us will know that the 1991 summer course series is what we've been going through. And we've completed four discourses in that series. In the past couple of weeks, we had a summary session of those four discourses. And now we have the fifth discourse. We had we took a little bit of time to bring this discourse for you because, as I had mentioned to you some time ago, this discourse was part of our discourse retranslation project. So what you'll be listening now will be the retranslated discourse that we've had Brother Sunil from the Radio Sai giving his voice for the translation. So that'll be the discourse we'll be going through as part of this week's and the following weeks. But before we go into what is this discourse about, what Swami has to say, and probably a short introduction before Swami starts speaking, I invite Brother Hari to join all of us. Sairam Hari.
Sairam Prem.
So going by what we've seen in this series, this is also going to be on the Upanishads. And probably one of the most, how do I put it, you know, it's a short capsule Upanishad, but very, very powerful, very profound Upanishad.
Yes, in fact, it catches the essence of, or it forms the main theme of some of the other larger Upanishads. Like the last time we dealt with the Chandogya,
First you'll have to name the Upanishad.
Oh, I'm very sorry about that. Yeah. Right. So we are dealing today with the Keno Upanishad. And it is also from the Samaveda.
Right.
And this is also considered one of the Mukhya Upanishads.
Right.
In fact, Bhagwan also has dealt with this particular Upanishad in great detail in his Upanishad Vahini.
Right.
So, as you were mentioning, that this Upanishad, it is a very short capsule, like just as the Ishavasya Upanishad we dealt with earlier.
Right.
But the theme, underlying theme, is something that is common, that is again dealt with in many other Upanishads. And you'll find it expanded in great detail in the Chandogya Upanishad, and as well as the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So the word itself, Keno, right, it means by whom,
right,
by what cause, right? And we'll see, like, Bhagwan actually introducing the topic, like what, you know, what the cause of what.
Right.
So,
whenever I go through some of these names of these Upanishads, imagine when you write an article, whenever we present an article for the website, so much of thought goes into the title of that article, and probably something which captures the entire essence of the article, even when you're trying to name a discourse of Swami. But many of these Upanishads are just named after the first syllable or first word of that Upanishad, saying that, you know, that's good enough. What's in a name after all? I think Keno Upanishad, like Ishavasya Upanishad, also has is named after that first word in the first verse of Upanishad. And, you know, talking of Keno Upanishad, I was a long time ago, I was listening to a commentary, and in that, this particular scholar who was speaking, he said, you know, the difference between Upanishads and Puranas. You know, you have many of these stories which come as part of your epics. You have the dialogue between Lord Rama and sage Vasishtha, which forms the Yoga Vasishtha. Or for that matter, you have the Bhagavad Gita itself. You have many of these short conversations which are very much like Upanishads. You know, they contain the essence of the, a particular scripture, or, you know, they are held out as the essence of that particular epic or story. Even in those Puranas or those stories, you'd find an elaborate conversation. You know, when the person asking the question will ask a question, in the question there will be three stories.
Right.
And the person who is giving the reply, he will have four or five stories in the reply. And probably it's done with the idea that it's meant for a wider audience.
Yes.
The stories, so that, you know, anybody can pick up whatever lesson is suitable for them.
Right.
But when you come to the Upanishads, there is a, you know, you can see that this is for the higher classes, almost in that sense, you know, because we're going to see this Upanishad, we've seen in the other Upanishads, the question is point blank. You know,
right,
it comes straight at the core of the thing. It also shows the level of understanding from which the question itself comes.
Yeah.
The answer, of course, is profound, but the question itself comes with a you know, fair bit of understanding of, and fair bit of, more than understanding, a fair bit of inquiry. Having done that inquiry, the question comes.
Mm.
And that's what makes these Upanishads, you know, stand out.
Yeah, because the seeker himself is he's very evolved, very prepared.
Right.
You know. In fact, Swami points out at the Brahma Sutras, the very beginning, Athato Brahma Jignyasa.
Exactly.
So there's like a lot of preparation, many things that have been done. And then, you know, the person is now ready for the inquiry into the Brahman.
Right.
And yeah, as you pointed out, so many of the stories are very cryptic. You know, many times, see, the stories in the Puranas are very relatable. Like you can you almost put yourself in the shoes of whoever is mentioned in the stories. And very elaborate, very easy for people to understand. But the stories in the which are presented in the Upanishads are very cryptic.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, they convey the message very powerfully, but in, you know, very summarized terms, right? Mm-hmm. So it really takes a lot of, I wouldn't say effort. See, intellectual effort, as Bhagavan himself says, and this Upanishad itself points out,
right,
intellectual effort will fail in our ability to grasp or comprehend what is being said there.
Right, right.
That's a difference. So it's just the, I think the nearest example we would have would be like a, what they call as a Zen koan.
Mm-hmm.
So there too we are given a very cryptic story,
okay,
which is actually given by the Zen master to the disciple and said, now meditate upon this.
Okay.
And no matter what, so if the disciple comes back and says, like, this is my interpretation,
mm-hmm,
the master hits him with a stick and he says,
okay,
go back.
Mm-hmm.
So because the intellectual understanding will just not, so the classic example would be like, what is the sound of one hand clapping?
Mm-hmm.
So now an example like that, if I ask you, now we might intellectually try and come up with a lot of answers,
mm-hmm,
but what we are encouraged to think is like, that is not the answer.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point of time, the contradiction or the very difficulty, at some point of time you break through that mental barrier and the understanding dawns.
Right, right.
The enlightenment dawns. So this is to be treated that way. These stories are to be meditated upon.
Yeah. I'm reminded of a story which I'm sure narrated many times before here.
Mm.
But as you're saying, it's such a simple story, but it explains a lot. You know, there is, I think it's again a Zen story.
Hmm.
These two disciples of a Zen monastery, and the primary sadhana of this monastery is, I mean, you have to keep thinking deeply about everything.
Hmm.
Every regular thing, common event which happens during the day, you have to think deeply.
Hmm.
That's how the students are trained. So apparently one of these students is sitting at the bank of a river and looking at the waters.
Hmm.
And his, co-student comes from behind and gives him a tight slap on his back.
Mm.
A good resounding slap. And there's a huge sound. And immediately the person, this a student who slapped on his back, he starts thinking. And he says, hey, did you listen to that sound? Did the sound come from my hand or did it come from your back? Okay. So that's the question he asks. And immediately the reply which the student who gets hit, he says, you know, you are in a better position to do the inquiry because I am having the pain right now. Right? And so profound, he says, as long as you are in a level where you are, experiencing the pain, or you relate to the pain and you kind of are attached to that pain, you can't go beyond to that state of inquiry.
Yeah.
In fact, if you go to that same Athato Brahma Jignyasa, I think the Sutra Vahini Swami speaks, that after what, you know? After this, you start exploring and searching for the Brahman. That's what it means. Swami says, after what? And there's, I think, three chapters about after what.
After.
And Swami says that, you know, the basic discrimination is covered in that.
Yeah.
You don't go to a guru and ask, what is the right thing to do?
Yes.
You know, you're supposed to have crossed and mastered that level where, you know, you're established in dharma. You know, what is the right thing to do at what time?
And we'll see some of those things being pointed out actually at the end of this.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, how important that is.
Mm.
You know, when Swami says, be good, see good. Swami, in fact, I think in the Sutra Vahini, he mentions that. When you are at that, a kind of an equilibrium state where you would do the right thing at any time, you automatically get, you know, that desire to know more into the deep matters. And I think Keno Upanishad, of course, is a very, very beautiful discourse. And dear listeners, as we go through this discourse, you'll see how beautifully Swami has spread it out. You know, it's already a simple discourse, but as we said, you need a certain bit of, mental preparedness to even dwell into an Upanishad such as this, but so beautifully Swami spaces it out, and I think he covers entirely Upanishad,
aspect.
Right? Every aspect of that Upanishad. Yeah. So I think we'll start with the first clip of this discourse, and we'll discuss after that.
Brahma darisena bhagyambu padayagori. Brahma darisena bhagyambu padayagori. Vetuka poyade vetatike verri manasa. Brahma darisena bhagyambu padayagori. Vetuka poyade vetatike verri manasa. Adiyu నీలోనే నున్నది కాంచుమచట అదియు అదియు నీలోనే నున్నది కాంచుమచట సత్యమును తెలుపు బాట సత్యమును తెలుపు బాట సాయి మాట సత్యమును దల్పు బాట ఈ సాయి మాట.
Seeking the fortune of God's vision, where do you go in search, O foolish mind? That is verily within you. Look for it there. These words of Sai reveals the path of truth.
ప్రేమయను పంట పండింప అలవి కాదు. ప్రేమను పంట పండింప నలవి కాదు. అంగడందున దీనిని అమ్మరాదు. ప్రభువులైనను సామాన్య ప్రజలునైనా అహము వినడాడి త్యాగులై అరయవలయు. ప్రేమయను పంట పండింప నలవి కాదు. అంగడులయందు పెట్టి అమ్ముటకు సాధ్యంబు లేదు. ప్రభువులైనను సామాన్య ప్రజలునైనా అహము విడనాడి త్యాగులై అరయవలయు. అహము విడనాడి త్యాగులై అరయవలయు.
Love is not a crop that can be cultivated, neither can it be traded in shops. Be they masters or commoners, the ego is to be given up, thus becoming men of sacrifice.
Divyatma Sarupulara.
Embodiments of the divine Atma.
Karma Chetramana. Jivayatra Salipe Pati Jiviki. Manasu. Vaku. Chevulu. Kannulu. Mukku. కాళ్ళు చేతులు ఇవన్నీ కూడాను నిత్య ఉపయోగార్థమై ఏర్పడినటువంటి కరణములు.
ఫర్ ఎవ్రీ ఇండివిజువల్ అండర్టేకింగ్ ద పిల్గ్రిమేజ్ ఆఫ్ లైఫ్ ఇన్ దిస్ ఫీల్డ్ ఆఫ్ యాక్షన్ మైండ్ స్పీచ్ ఇయర్స్ ఐస్ నోస్ ఫీట్ అండ్ హ్యాండ్స్ ఆర్ ఇన్స్ట్రుమెంట్స్ క్రియేటెడ్ ఫర్ ద పర్పస్ ఆఫ్ రెగ్యులర్ యూజ్.
కరణములనగా పనిముట్లు.
కరణములు మీన్స్ ఇన్స్ట్రుమెంట్స్.
తన జీవయాత్రలో ఉపయోగించుకునేటువంటి యొక్క కరణములు కనుకనే దీనికి ఉపకరణములని కూడాను మరొక పేరు.
As these instruments are used in the journey of life, they are also referred to as ఉపకరణాస్.
ప్రాకృతమైన ఈ జగత్తునందు ఏ విధమైన విజయమును సాధించవలనన్నను కరణం కారణం కర్త ఈ మూడు కూడాను అత్యవసరం.
టు అచీవ్ ఎనీథింగ్ ఇన్ దిస్ మేనిఫెస్ట్ వరల్డ్ ద ఇన్స్ట్రుమెంట్ కాస్ అండ్ డూవర్ దీస్ త్రీ ఆర్ మోస్ట్ ఎసెన్షియల్.
ఈ కరణమును ఉపయోగించుకునేటువంటి వాడు కర్త.
ద వన్ హూ యూజెస్ దీస్ ఇన్స్ట్రుమెంట్స్ ఇస్ కాల్డ్ కర్త ఆర్ ద డూవర్.
ఉపయోగింపబడేటువంటి వాడు కారకుడు.
Doer is the one who uses them.
కారకుని యొక్క కోరిక కేవలము కారణము.
The desire of the doer is the cause.
కరణ కారణ కర్త ఈ మూడింటి యొక్క ఏకత్వాన్ని మానవుడు గుర్తించడమే ప్రధాన లక్ష్యము.
Recognizing the unity of the instrument, cause and doer is the primary purpose of man.
Samanyamuga kannulu chustunnavani chevulu vintunnavani noru maatladuchunnadani nitya jeevithamulo manam ee padamulanu upayogapettuntam.
In everyday parlance we say the eyes see, the ears hear and the tongue speaks.
Kani chutunade kannulaina maatladunade noraina వినునవే చెవులైనా మానవుడు మరణించిన తరువాత ఈ చెవులు ఈ కన్నులు ఈ నోరు ఉన్నది కాని తాను తమ తమ కర్మమును తాము ఆచరించటం లేదు.
ఈవెన్ దో ది ఐస్ పర్ఫార్మ్ ది యాక్ట్ ఆఫ్ సీయింగ్ ద టంగ్ దట్ ఆఫ్ స్పీకింగ్ అండ్ ద ఇయర్ లిస్నింగ్ వెన్ అ పర్సన్ డైస్ ది ఐస్ ఇయర్స్ అండ్ టంగ్ డు నాట్ పర్ఫార్మ్ దేర్ ఫంక్షన్స్ even though they are present.
ఇవి కనిపించక వినిపించక కేవలము పలుకక ఉండినటువంటి దానికి కారణమేమిటి?
What is the reason behind their ceasing to see, hear and talk?
దీనిని పలికించే వినిపించే అనిపించే తలపించేటువంటి ఒక శక్తి ఇందులో ఏదో ఒకటి అంతర్భూతమై ఉంటున్నది మానవుని యందు.
There seems to be some power latent in man which makes them speak, hear, see and think.
అది ఈ దేహమునందు ఉండినంత వరకే కన్నులు చూడగలుగుతున్నాయి, చెవులు వినగలుగుతున్నాయి, నోరు మాట్లాడగలుగుతున్నాయి, చేతులు పనిచేయగలుగుతున్నాయి, కాళ్ళు నడచగలుగుతున్నాయి.
Only as long as this power exists in man, the eyes are able to see, the ears are able to hear, the tongue is able to speak, the hands are able to perform actions and the legs are able to walk.
కనుక సమస్త కరణములకును ప్రాణము పోసి వాటి వాటి కర్తవ్య కర్మలను ఆచరింపజేసేటువంటి యొక్క దివ్య శక్తి మానవుడి యందు ఒకటి ఉన్నది.
So there is one divine power that fills life into all these instruments and enables them to perform their functions and actions.
దానిని సామాన్యముగా ప్రాణము అని పిలుచగలుగుతున్నాం.
దాట్ ఈస్ జనరలీ రిఫర్డ్ టు యాజ్ ప్రాణ ఆర్ ద లైఫ్ ప్రిన్సిపల్.
అయితే ఈ ప్రాణము ఎక్కడి నుంచి వచ్చుచున్నది, ఎక్కడికి వెళ్ళుచున్నది, ఎవరు పంపుతున్నారు?
వేర్ డస్ దిస్ లైఫ్ ప్రిన్సిపల్ కమ్ ఫ్రమ్, వేర్ డస్ ఇట్ గో అండ్ హూ సెండ్స్ ఇట్?
ఇది కేనోపనిషత్తు వేసినటువంటి ప్రశ్న.
This is the question posed by the Keno-Upanishad.
Kanuka ee palikinche vinipinche anipinche talipinche muripinche ee divyamainatundi shakti pranamulo unnada leka pranamulakante adhipati ainatundi maroka shakti emaina unnada ani vicharana salaputu vachindi.
It further inquired whether the prana or the life principle has the power to enable speaking, hearing, thinking and feeling, or if there is a power greater than even the prana.
So that, dear listeners, was the first clip of that discourse. Sorry, we forgot to mention the date on which that discourse was delivered. It was 25th of May 1991, the fifth discourse in the series of discourses, 1991 summer course. So again, I think pretty much Swami starts with what the first few verses of the Keno Upanishad speaks of. You know, it starts off with the reference to the senses, the mind, and I think, do you recall the exact translation of the first few lines of the Keno Upanishad?
No, essentially the word Kena here, you can translate it as by whom or by what cause.
Right.
Right. As Swami says, like, by whose power does the eye see?
Right.
And the ears hear and the tongue speak.
And the mind thinks.
And the mind think. Right. Yeah. So, in fact, the first two verses, they begin with this question.
Right.
Right. Swami again is recreating here.
Right.
But I think more importantly, like I thought the paragraph before, where Swami is actually asking us, you know, the entire discourse or the entire Upanishad, Swami is asking us to see it from the point of view of the instrument, that is the Karana.
Mm-hmm.
Then the cause, you know, the
Karana, right.
Karana and the doer, Karta.
Right.
So the inquiry is also into all these three. So we are right now, we are pretty much aware of what is the, you know, the Karana, like
right.
what we have. So as the Upanishad and also Swami speaks, like we are looking at the sense organs.
Right.
Right, and right away Swami says that the mind, speech, ears, nose, hands and feet, these are the you know, instruments through which we are able to function in this world. But the next two questions are what we are looking at here.
Mm-hmm.
Like who is the cause? What is the, you know, primal cause?
Right.
What is the impeller of all this? And then the doer, that also simultaneously answers, then who is the doer?
Right.
Right, so Swami in fact hints that there is a unity of all these three, the
right.
instrument, the cause and the doer. And that's when we start asking the question, then by who? So
right.
that starts the thread.
Right. And of course a short mention of the two padyams which Swami starts the discourse. You know, we're talking about search, we're telling, okay, where do we look for it?
Yeah.
And what are we looking for? But before that, Swami says, you know, where should you look for it?
Mm.
Swami says, look for it within.
Yeah.
And that direction of, you know, where are you searching for? And also suggesting that it has to be sought with the help of the faculties that you have and looking keenly at the faculties that you have.
Mm.
You know, it is like objectively look at it and, you know, you are observing the functioning of your body.
Yeah.
You don't have to go to somewhere else and, you know, in search of anything else. Just observe yourself. It's always that very suggestive, that first poem of Swami, that you could just do that and you will be able to reach the Brahman which is verily inside you.
Right.
And of course, love is always part of Swami's message. But Swami beautifully, you know, speaks of love and sacrifice. Swami says that you could be a king, you could be, you know, you can achieve all these things. But at the end of it, how much are you ready to sacrifice and how much are you able to sacrifice? That will define your worthiness to find what you're looking for. And of course, this it's a very beautiful point as you raise this Karanam, Karta and Karanam. And this is something which even in the previous discourse Swami mentioned that, you know, the importance of keeping that purpose always in mind.
Yeah.
You know, what are you looking for? And as we said, as we're talking about the Upanishads itself, that purpose is very overbearing in all of the conversations that you see in the Upanishads. It's very clear that I'm not interested in, you know, achieving worldly success. I'm not interested in amassing wealth.
Mm.
I'm after the truth.
Right.
That purpose is very clear and very, very beautifully, you know, it runs as an undercurrent through all the conversations and all the interactions which happen. And Swami is, you know, right in the beginning, he says that the unity of the one who is seeking and the methods or the instruments which he uses for seeking and
right.
the purpose.
And the purpose.
When that unity is recognized, then you're ready to go in that sense.
Yeah. And yeah, so in this, you know, Swami is also saying one thing that you know, reality is beyond the empirical.
Right.
So we are all caught up in that, you know, the what the eye is seeing and what are the ears hearing.
Exactly.
And what is the mind thinking. Or I don't think we even think about what the mind is thinking, right? So there is a certain automatic behavior that we all possess. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and in that moment of inattention or that inattentiveness, a lot is missed.
Right.
And we are so caught up because the moment the mind starts running after something, we never pause to think, like, you know, what is happening.
Right,
like,
right.
So that's why the first thing Swami says is that the reality is beyond like what you see. So it's literally, as Swami later pointed out, we are directing our attention in the wrong direction, in fact.
Right.
Right. So we'll have to switch that.
You know, you would see this many times, even when you're probably solving a problem or trying to learn a concept in science. I don't know about you, I've faced it many times. We try to learn it from the middle, you know, because that's the easiest thing to do. Sometimes it's easier to skip the basics.
Right.
You know, just learn what is necessary for, you know, the exam which is coming by or something like that. And we try to learn a concept from in between.
Yeah.
Like, you know, wherever it matters for that moment, we start from there. And that is precisely why we get most of our concepts wrong.
Mm.
And, you know, this is precisely what Swami is telling here. You start not by what you see, the nature of what you see, but start by the nature of sight itself. You know,
right.
Where is the sight coming from?
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at it, most of the greatest inquiries begin with stupid questions,
yeah,
sometimes, or, and, you know, weird or absurd questions.
To take that analogy further, you know, like somebody, like I love solving mathematics problems, and I've often found that the best solutions come from putting yourself in the position of the problem poser.
Okay.
You try to think, okay, like, in what context did he possibly get this problem from? Mm-hmm. And very often, that leads the solutions.
Right. In fact, there was a study once, you know, there was a question which was raised about the structure of the atom.
Mm.
They say that we have come to the conclusion that the structure given by Schrodinger and the other quantum physicists who came later, is more precise and, you know, more closer to probably what the structure of the atom would be.
Yeah.
Why do we still teach the Bohr's theory,
yeah,
which has clearly been proved as, you know, as something which is wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have moved beyond that theory, but we still teach Bohr's theory in most of our schools. And I think there was a study which was done, a statistical study was done by University of Colorado, I think, and they came up with the understanding that students who learned the Bohr's theory and then learn the Schrodinger's model,
right,
get a better understanding of quantum physics,
yeah,
and the structure of the atom.
Yeah.
So they were saying that it's so important sometimes to learn the history along with the with the science,
yes,
because, you know, you're learning the process of learning,
correct,
rather than learning, yeah, the concept. I think that is what this Upanishad is about. Trying to take you to the process of learning. You know, somebody has found,
yeah,
okay, you know, the Brahman is inside, you know that, you know, we've crossed the syllabus of Tattvamasi in the second discourse, the third discourse itself.
Yeah.
But now you're going back to how did they come to that conclusion? I think that is interesting for a student of science. At the same time, that's how science is meant to be learned. And that's what that study actually came up with. So when you teach the process, you are actually inculcating a scientific perspective into the student rather than just the, you know, the facts as they are.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, recreating the whole process again and again, no? Like the process of inquiry. And Upanishad after Upanishad, you'll find literally the same conversations.
Right,
no? Like,
right.
So it's like almost helpful for, I can imagine the people of yore as they chanted and they ruminated. And, you know, it's a repetitive process, and it takes that much compassion for the teacher also to descend to the level of the student instead of just giving, you know, that this is what it is. But to take them through that inquiry like a catechism, as most of the stories are.
Right.
There's just one more thing, like, you know, I was just thinking about this. When reality is beyond what the senses can perceive, it is something that I cannot intellectually, logically deduce, right? And in that case, like, how do I believe in that reality?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, when I'm studying all these Upanishads and all, like, and the question at some point of time it emerges, if this is something that my mind cannot, you know, logically conclude as true or false, then how do I believe in it?
Right.
Right, and that there is just simply no answer but faith.
True.
It is, you have to observe, you know, the masters, you have to observe Swami, right, the source of the Vedas.
Right.
And this is the truth that he leads, and then you see, like, what he is,
right,
the kind of being that he has. And then you get attracted to that. So the only thing you have is faith.
That's what a discussion I think we had during the last series.
Mm.
We were talking about that, and somebody, let's say, is advertising for a product,
mm.
and they are saying that when you do this and it's so special, it gives you like this.
Yeah.
The person who is advertising for the product
yeah.
benefits by you buying his idea,
right?
Mm-hmm. Buying into his say a promotion or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But here are a set of individuals who have mm. nothing to do with whether you believe them or you don't believe them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
If such a person comes up to you and gives you something, it can be nothing but the truth.
Yeah.
And it's again, it just comes to that point where, you believe, you have faith that there is nothing these people can gain from me. And they are saying that this is the end of our research. You take it or you leave it.
Yeah.
It becomes so difficult to leave it.
In fact, Nisargadatta Maharaj, like mm-hmm. one of very well-known
right,
saints,
yeah.
right? So he speaks of how he attained his realization. Like he was leading a very ordinary life, and he was taken by his friend to meet a particular guru. So the guru just looks into his eyes and he says that just have faith in these words, that you are not the person you take yourself to be. You are.
Mm-hmm.
You are in fact the supreme consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes back. Those words have a certain effect on him. They're ringing in his ears. And at some point of time, he just thinks to himself, so why did this guru tell me? What did he have to gain?
Mm-hmm.
He had nothing to gain from it.
Mm-hmm.
It must be the truth. And that's where
right.
his inquiry begins. He just stands in that state that the statement that the guru said is true.
Right.
It's inviolate truth, right? So, he holds on to that, just the words of the guru, and he reaches his goal.
Yeah.
But it starts from that, just the inquiry called, why did the guru say this to me when he had nothing to gain from me following these words? In fact, 2 weeks after he says these words to the Maharaj, the guru passes away.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing he got from that. So, faith, it is such a powerful force. Right, it has the ability to take us right to the
truth. It's true, because even in this inquiry, in this path of inquiry, you talk about Kenopanishad, these questions, we don't have all the answers. Sometimes you can ask the questions,
yeah.
you might get answers, the answers might not be convincing. The answers that are convincing today don't seem to be convincing tomorrow.
Yeah.
Mm. You are literally groping in the dark. So you need a certain amount of faith which guides you from inside and keeps you going. In the earlier discourse, the discourse of Tattvamasi, Swami says that, people have achieved it. That is inspiration enough for you.
Mm-hmm.
So start by believing that you can.
Yeah.
However you might falter, how many ever times you might slip, believe that you can because somebody who is just like you has achieved it. And keep that as your inspiration. And I think that's what it is. And there is a conversation which one of the monks from the Ramakrishna order, he says, he goes up to his master and says, I can keep inquiring like this, this similar thing. He says, who is the seer through the eyes? And, who is the one who is living through me? So he says, I keep asking this question. I can go to a certain extent, but after that, there's a wall of darkness.
Mm.
Okay, and the guru's eyes light up. He says, yes, that is the wall you have to cross. He says, keep at it. At one day, you'll suddenly, go really? Beyond that and you'll see that. He says, you will see the light that illumines that darkness. I think that's what it is. It finally comes to that faith. And as Swami has said, the purest core of you is that same thing what you're looking for.
Yeah. That word with which the Guru used, that is we see it in the Purusha Suktam. No?
Mm-hmm.
Aditya Varnam Tamasaparastat.
Right. Beyond darkness.
Beyond the darkness.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So there is hope, even though we find it a little difficult. So we'll go to the next clip in that discourse, in the second clip, and we'll see what Swami has to say.
Suryudu prakashistunnadu.
The sun shines.
Suryuni yokka velutulu aadharam chetane chandrudu prakashistunnadu.
Using the sun's light as the basis, the moon shines.
Chandruni yokka prakashame bhoomi paina paduchunnadi.
The moonlight falls on earth.
అప్పుడు భూమి కూడాను ప్రకాశిస్తూ ఉన్నది.
దెన్ ద ఎర్త్ షైన్స్ టూ.
అయితే ఈ భూమి ప్రకాశము దేని వల్ల ప్రకాశిస్తున్నది?
వాట్ దెన్ ఇస్ ద కాజ్ ఫర్ ద ఎర్త్స్ గ్లో?
చంద్రుని యొక్క ప్రకాశము చేతని.
ఇట్ ఇస్ ద లైట్ ఫ్రమ్ ద మూన్.
చంద్రుని యొక్క ప్రకాశము దేని వల్ల ప్రకాశించుచున్నది?
వేర్ డస్ ద మూన్ గెట్ ఇట్స్ లైట్ ఫ్రమ్?
సూర్యుని యొక్క ప్రకాశము చేతని.
ఇట్ ఇస్ ఫ్రమ్ ద సన్స్ లైట్.
అయితే సూర్యుని యొక్క ప్రకాశం దేని వల్ల ప్రకాశించుతున్నది?
ఫ్రమ్ వేర్ డస్ ద సన్ గెట్ ఇట్స్ లైట్?
అది ఏ దివ్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క శక్తి?
దాట్ ఈస్ ద డివైన్ శక్తి ఆర్ పవర్.
దీనిలో ఉండినటువంటి హైడ్రోజన్, హీలియం అనేటువంటిది ఏ శక్తి నుంచి ఆవిర్భవించినటువంటి?
విచ్ ఇస్ ద పవర్ ఫ్రమ్ వేర్ ద హైడ్రోజన్ అండ్ హీలియం ఇన్ ద సన్ హ్యావ్ ఎమర్జ్డ్?
దీనినే ఉపనిషత్తులు బ్రహ్మతత్వము అన్నారు.
ద ఉపనిషత్స్ కాల్ ఇట్ బ్రహ్మతత్వం.
ఈ బ్రహ్మ యొక్క ప్రకాశము చేతనే జగత్తంతైకుడును ప్రకాశించుచున్నదనియు.
అండ్ ఇట్ ఇస్ ఎక్స్ప్లెయిన్ దట్ ద హోల్ కాస్మాస్ ఇస్ ఇల్యూమిన్డ్ బై దిస్ డివైన్ పవర్.
కేవలం బ్రహ్మ ప్రకాశింపచేయునదే కాని బ్రహ్మను ప్రకాశింపచేసేటువంటి వస్తువులు జగత్తునందు లేవనియు, ఈ బ్రహ్మ యొక్క ప్రకాశమే నేత్రములు యందు చేరి నేత్రములు చూడగలుగుతున్నవనియు.
ద బ్రహ్మన్ ఇల్యూమిన్స్ బట్ దెర్ ఇస్ నథింగ్ ఇన్ ద వరల్డ్ దట్ ఇల్యూమిన్స్ ద బ్రహ్మన్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ అండ్ దట్ ద బ్రహ్మన్స్ ఎఫల్జన్స్ ఎంటర్స్ ద ఐస్ అండ్ ఎనేబుల్ ఇట్ టు సీ.
కాని నేత్రములు చూడగలుగుతున్నవే కాని నేత్రములు బ్రహ్మను చూడలేకపోతున్నవి.
దో ది ఐస్ కెన్ సీ దే ఆర్ అనేబుల్ టు బిహోల్డ్ ద బ్రహ్మన్.
మనస్సు ఈ యొక్క ప్రకాశం యొక్క ఆధారమును పురస్కరించుకుని సంకల్పమును అభివృద్ధి గావించుకుంటున్నదే కాని మనస్సు ఈ బ్రహ్మను వర్ణించలేకపోతున్నది.
ద మైండ్ బేసింగ్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ ఆన్ దిస్ బ్రిలియన్స్ ఆఫ్ ద బ్రహ్మన్ జనరేట్స్ థాట్స్ బట్ ఇస్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ అనేబుల్ టు డిస్క్రైబ్ దిస్ బ్రహ్మన్.
కనుకనే ఉపనిషత్తులు ఏదో వాచో నివర్తంతే అప్రాప్య మనసా సహా, మనస్సును కాని వాక్కును కాని అతీతమైనటువంటి యొక్క దివ్యతత్వము మానవుని యందు ఇమిడి ఉన్నదిని నిరూపిస్తూ వచ్చినది.
Thus the Upanishads proclaim, it is that from which speech and the mind retreat without comprehending, and it is proved that there is a divine principle latent in man which is beyond the mind and speech.
కనుక మానవుని యందు ఇట్టి దివ్యమైన భవ్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క శక్తి ఇమిడి ఉండియు మానవుడు దానిని గుర్తించుకోలేకపోతున్నాడు.
Though there is this divine power latent within man, he is unable to recognize it.
కారణం ఏమిటి?
What is the reason?
మానవుడు తన జీవితమునందు బాహ్య దృష్టిని అభివృద్ధి పరచుకున్నట్టుగా ప్రయత్నిస్తున్నాడు కాని అంతర్దృష్టిని ఏమాత్రం కూడాను తాను ప్రయత్నించుకుని అనుభవించుటకు ప్రాకులాడటం లేదు.
Man in his life is putting efforts to enhance his outward vision, but is making no efforts to develop and experience the inner vision.
మానవుడు చక్కగా విచారణ సలిపిన అంతర్దృష్టి చేత ఈ సత్యమును గుర్తించుటకు సాధ్యమవుతుంది.
If man inquires diligently, it is possible for him to realize this truth with his inward vision.
కనుక ప్రతి మానవుడు కూడాను తన యందున్నటువంటి యొక్క సమస్త కరణములను కూడాను వ్యాపింపజేసి ప్రకటింపజేసి దానిని వికసింపజేసేటువంటి ఒక శక్తి తన యందు ఉండినప్పటికీ తాను కేవలము ఒక బలహీనుడిగాను కేవలము అశక్తుడిగాను భావించుకుంటున్నాడు.
Though that power that illumines and animates all the senses is present within each one, man considers himself as weak and powerless.
కొరకు ఇట్టి దివ్యమైనటువంటి శక్తిని మానవుడు ఏ విధంగా విచారించాలి?
How must man comprehend such a divine power?
దీనిని కేరోపనిషత్తు ఈ దివ్యమైనటువంటి శక్తి మనసునకు మనసై, ప్రాణమునకు ప్రాణమై, నేత్రమునకు నేత్రమై, శ్రోత్రమునకు శ్రోత్రమై, వాక్కునకు వాక్కై, అన్నింటిని కూడాను అంతర్భూతంగా దానిని ప్రకాశింపచేయుచున్నాడు.
The Kenopanishad declares that this divine power illumines all the senses from within, as the mind, of the life force, the eyes of the eyes, ears of the ears, and the speech of the speech.
కారులు లైటు వెలగవలనన్నా, హారులు శబ్దం చేయించవలనన్నా, లేక చక్రములు తిరగవలనన్నా, మిషను నడచవలనన్నా, దీనికి లోపల కరెంటు అత్యవసరము.
ఇన్ అ కార్, బి ఇట్ ఫర్ ద లైట్ టు గ్లో, ద హార్న్ టు సౌండ్, ద వీల్స్ టు రొటేట్, ఆర్ ఫర్ ద ఇంజిన్ టు ఫంక్షన్, ద పవర్ ఆర్ ఎలక్ట్రిసిటీ ఆర్ ద కరెంట్ విదిన్ ఈస్ నెసెసరీ.
వెలిగే లైటు, నడిచే చక్రములు, కదిలే ఇంజను పలికే హార్ను అన్ని కూడాను కరెంట్ పైన ఆధారపడి ఉన్నవనేటువంటి సత్యమును గుర్తించినప్పుడే మన ఈ సర్వకరణములు కూడాను దివ్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క ఆత్మశక్తి చేత ఇవి తమ తమ ప్రభావం చేత తమ తమ కర్తవ్యాన్ని నిర్వర్తిస్తున్నవనే సత్యం కూడాను మనకు అర్థమవుతుంది.
When we acknowledge the truth that the glowing light, the moving wheels, the functioning engine and the sounding horn are based on this power within the car, in the same vein, we can understand that all our senses function and discharge their duties due to the power of the divine Atma. Every flower that blossoms does not become a fruit.
కాచిన కాయలన్నీ కూడాను పండ్లు కావు.
ఎవ్రీ ఫ్రూట్ డస్ నాట్ రైపన్.
కానీ పండిన పండ్లన్నీ కూడాను క్రింద పడక తప్పదు.
బట్ ఆల్ ఫ్రూట్స్ విచ్ రైపన్ ఆర్ బౌండ్ టు ఫాల్ డౌన్.
ఇది ఏ మానవత్వంలో ఉన్నటువంటి ప్రధాన రహస్యం.
దిస్ ఇస్ ద మోస్ట్ ఇంపార్టెంట్ సీక్రెట్ విచ్ ఇస్ ఇన్హెరెంట్ ఇన్ హ్యూమన్ లైఫ్.
కారణ కర్తవ్యములు ముగిసే గాని
వెన్ ద టైమ్ కాల్స్ అండ్ డ్యూటీస్ ఎండ్
కాయము అనేటువంటిది నిశ్శక్తిహీనమై నిర్వీర్యమై ప్రాణరహితమై నిర్జీవమై నిలిచిపోతుంది.
ద బాడీ బికమ్స్ వీక్ లూసెస్ రేడియన్స్ గివ్స్ అప్ లైఫ్ అండ్ టర్న్స్ లైఫ్లెస్.
అయితే ఈ జీవతత్వమునకు ఆధారమేమిటి?
వాట్ ఈస్ ద బేసిస్ ఫర్ దిస్ లైఫ్ ప్రిన్సిపల్?
అది ఏ ఆత్మతత్వం?
ఇట్ ఈస్ ది ఆత్మిక్ ప్రిన్సిపల్.
దాట్ వాస్ ద సెకండ్ క్లిప్ అండ్ it's precisely the second verse in that Kila Upanishad, I think, second verse, or what is the answer to the question which was posed.
Right.
And as most of them would say it, you know, a very profound question is asked and an equally profound and cryptic answer is given. You know, he is the eye of the eye, the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind. That's the answer.
Also a very beautiful poetry.
Right, yeah, beautiful poetry. I think, in fact, I was just reading about Kila Upanishad as a they study it as a scripture and for the history, I mean the chronology of the thing.
Yes.
They say it's one of the few Upanishads which has a lot of poetry content in it.
Yeah.
And they believe it's one of the Upanishads which has bridged that period between prosaic Upanishads and the poetic ones.
Yes. And and in fact, like you can see elements of prose and poetry,
right,
both are, you know,
right,
contained. I think the first 15 verses are in the poetic form,
poetic
and then
form,
there's
right,
a intermission, so to speak,
right,
which is
right,
prose. But said in such a memorable fashion, right? You know, that which illumines speech, but is not illumined by speech.
Right, right. Very
right?
Beautiful.
So it really captures one's imagination too.
Right. Right.
So that sets the something in motion. You know, like there will be something to this, right? And so Bhagwan, as you said, the answer to the question which is just posed before, and it still does not, you know, satisfy the intellect,
right?
So because as the intellect is trying to grasp, like it can only grasp with what the senses have so far fed us,
right?
And the senses have no answer to this question. Because you know, if I ask you to describe Prem, what is behind you? Right? It is extremely difficult. You just cannot.
Right.
And so you're looking in completely the wrong direction.
Right. And the beauty is, it starts with things you can see. You know, it starts with that when Swami speaks about what happens when a person dies.
Yeah.
You know, all of the senses are there. It's not seen. That's an experience that we all go through. We cannot deny it. It happens.
Yeah.
We do recognize it. We do, you know, we have experienced it every day in our life. As you said, we don't have an answer to it, but it kind of unsettles your thinking. You know, you as you said, we are always thinking about what lies in front of the eyes, in front of the senses. It is a shake up to see that, you know, where does it all begin? You know, what is the cause? What is causing this ability in you to see, the ability in you to think?
Yeah, because something can activate it or animate it, and something can, you know, totally deactivate.
And something when it's withdrawn, suddenly it seems to be...
Yeah. So what is that missing element?
Right. And in fact, when Swami speaks of this, you know, the example of the sun shines and the moon illumines from the sunshine, but the sun is again illumined by the hydrogen and helium in it. But what gives the hydrogen and helium the power?
Yeah.
You know, you keep challenging yourself to go behind and behind it. And of course, Swami says that everything is illumined by the Brahman. The senses are illumined by the Brahman. But the Brahman is not illumined by anything.
Anything, yes.
So the Brahman illumines the mind. How can the mind comprehend the Brahman? You know, in another discourse, Swami beautifully says, how can you lift a rock you're standing on?
Right.
You know, your very foundation is a rock. How can you lift that rock?
Right.
You know, so beautifully it describes the same what Swami says.
Yeah.
But the Brahman is illumined. I mean, the mind is illumined by the Brahman, and precisely that's why the mind cannot understand the Brahman.
Yeah. Like this theme, no, you know, like Swami in his own inimitable fashion, by his actions he actually brings these things to life, right, in a very small way. I remember, you know, one of the incidents narrated by a very close friend of mine who was also quite close physically to Bhagwan.
Okay.
This took place in his student days, and it was in Trai Brindavan. So Swami had called him into Trai, his residential quarters, and also present were a few elders, some of whom were the chairman of L&T and some other senior officials from that company.
Okay.
So they're all seated in the central hall of Trai Vrindavan. It's the afternoon time, and Swami raises the topic of what is the next service project that we are going to undertake.
Mm-hmm.
He says we are going to start another water project, drinking water project. So this was soon after the Anantapur project was completed.
Okay.
Phase one was complete, and Swami had raised the topic of where is the next place that we'll do it. Right, and Swami was looking at the senior officials from L&T and asked them, so where is that we are doing it next? And for some reason either they were caught unawares or that, you know, the whole, they were awed by being in Swami's presence, they just didn't answer. So no words came out of their mouth. And Swami turned to this particular student and looked at him.
Mm-hmm.
And when Swami looked at him, all the senior officials also started looking at him as if somehow he had the answer.
He had the answer.
Whereas he had absolutely no inkling. He didn't know that there's another water project coming up, and he had no clue who the people over there were also.
Right.
And all he knew over there was Swami and his warden. And they're all looking at him as if he has the answer. And he's just looking at Swami. And he says the very next moment, he heard himself say the word Medak.
Oh.
He said, even as the words came out of his mouth, the thought that first crossed his mind is, could this actually be the name of a place?
Is there a place called Medak?
Yeah, and what a funny name that a place can have. And because he had, as I said, no, he had no forethought. It just came just out of his mind. And Swami said, yes, and immediately, yes, the Medak and Mehboob Nagar, yes. He looked at the L&T chairman and they continued the conversation.
Amazing.
But he could no longer join the conversation because he was completely rattled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the question came like, did I think of that answer? How did these words even come out of my mouth? You know? And then he realized he is sitting right in front of that very presence, you know, which causes everything to happen. The mind thinks because of that
amazing
presence.
It reminds me of what Dr. Ravikumar shared with us once, you know, the current warden of the Vrindavan campus. He had gone for his Viva OC after he had completed his research, you know, defense. So he had worked on this particular plant, natural product chemistry. He had worked on a particular plant for 5-6 years or something like that. And of course, he had got very good results and the thesis was good as such. So he goes for this Viva, and of all the questions they could ask, they asked, what is the Indian name of this plant? Okay. And he had no clue.
Right.
He had never come across that terminology ever.
Yeah.
And it's so embarrassing that, you know, you've worked on it for so long and you've not even, the basics of the plant, you've not made friends with the plant. It's almost like that. You know, he had no clue what to answer, and this was a panel which had completely come externals. So, university's name is at stake and he's wondering, Swami, this is really embarrassing. What should I do? And he starts praying to Swami. He said, Swami, only you can help me. Because I've never come across this. I have no clue of this. It's not that I've forgotten it. I absolutely don't know this. And he prayed to Swami and he said, just as you said, he heard him telling a name for that plant. Okay, some name in Telugu and Kannada it is.
Yeah, okay.
He heard him telling a name, and the person was very thrilled, you know, he heard it. He said, yes, that's the correct name.
You know, completely.
He said, most people don't know that.
Right.
And he said, most people get lost in the details, and you're absolutely right. And he goes out, and his guide is waiting for him, so how did the thing go and all that? No, I'm sorry, the guide was part of the panel. Fight was there.
Mm.
And he came and said, oh, I was so surprised that you gave that answer.
Mm.
Because when they asked you that question, it even struck me that we have never discussed this before. So I'm very glad that you had read it up yourself. He said, no sir, I had no clue. So it happened really, you know, when you think of it, you know, these people whom we are saying that they were exploring where the inspiration for thought comes, where the inspiration for word comes, they're literally shooting arrows in the dark. But with experience such as this, you know where it really comes from.
Yeah.
You know, you really know it comes from somewhere, and it's coming from within. It's not a voice that you hear from outside or, you know, Swami materializing there and telling you. It is coming from within. So that's why I think Sai Prakash would always say, discussing, he said, it's a very funny feeling when you're sitting in front of Swami.
Hmm.
Because, you know, here you are trying to impress a person who's outside you with your actions, with your intentions or whatever. And all the while, completely believing that he is within you.
Right.
So much of discord between the two, but we had no discomfort with it. You know, we lived in harmony with that idea.
And Swami would time and again remind us of this fact. You know, like, I remember just as when you were talking about Sai Prakash and you said that how we try to impress Bhagwan. I recall what had once happened. So, this was just a few months into my, you know, when I started my studies here. And in my background, I had done engineering before I came here for the MBA, right? So, that particular day, it was a very happy day for me because Swami, he said, I want engineers for a particular very small thing to be done.
I know, so Swami has his typical style, no? Any manual work, he'll ask for tall, lefty boys.
Yeah.
It would be as simple as lifting a table, but, you know, just that giving that opportunity.
Yes, I can never forget, you know, that day I was seated a little behind. One of my friends, he was sitting in front. So Swami called him.
Okay.
And he was saying something and I was like feeling very envious. How I wish, you know, I would be the object of Swami's attention. How I wish Swami was talking to me. And just I was thinking these thoughts and that something Swami had said to that that particular student, he turned back, looked at me and asked for me. I was so thrilled.
Okay.
I ran up there and Swami said, see, I want you engineers. There's one more classmate of mine who's also an engineer. He joined us. So three of us are over there and Swami gave us the task. He said the next day there was to be a mass marriage. And he wanted us to do two things. One is he wanted to measure out a certain area in Kulwanthal. So the tape and all were given to us and we amateur engineers, we were at it, you know. I think that task was already done before. been done by the experts, but for some reason Swami wanted a game to be played out with us. So we went
typical
and
typical Bhagavad Gita. I've already accomplished the task.
Yes.
You couldn't do it.
So there we were. We were like measuring the, you know, extents between some two pillars Swami had said. And, you know, and Swami's style, you know, like from there he'll be, you know, calling out instructions and we'll keep running back to hear what Swami said, resume our work. So it was a lot of activity going on and I was enjoying, you know, like, oh, something we aspire for. We were doing all those measurements, everything is done and then we come back to Swami. Then Swami says, see, here now a couple has to sit and, you know, ladies wear saris and then they've got all these, you know, things for the puja, puja samagri that has to be kept over here. With all this, see, you need about, you know, this much area per person. And now you tell me how many couples can be seated. So, the, you know, I was someone who prided myself at my ability to do calculations very quickly.
Right.
Yeah, mentally I can go through it pretty fast. And Swami had directed this question to my friend. And he was at a loss for the answer. He looked at me. And the other friend took the cue. He also looked at me. And finally, Swami also looked at me. So it was like, you know, all three are looking at me for the answer. And even under in that situation, I can still remember the numbers were a little, you know, tough. So I did some quick approximation. And with great pride that I had done the approximation, I was able to please Swami, you know. And I was about to tell the answer. I still know the answer. The answer was 300.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I still know the answer. And I was about to say it. And for some reason, it was as if that answer was pulled out of my head.
Okay.
And I don't know why, I said 400 to Bhagwan.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami started, he said, "You engineers, you don't know anything." And I was like, I'm looking at Swami and I know what he has done. Yes, because after 2 minutes, Swami says, "Hey, it is not 400, it is 300. So, even that when I sat back, I just reflected at, the powerful presence in various, right, whom we were interacting with.
Right.
You get fooled by Bhagwan and you think, he does not know enough, he has not studied enough. It's very easy to be fooled by, Bhagwan's actions. Right? But when I went back, I just kept reflecting on, just who Swami is. Right? And how powerfully, where does he, where is he? The question is, Prakash raised, simultaneously you can see him physically present outside, but you know that he's a very powerful presence somewhere inside you.
Right. It reminds me of an incident which one more old student shared. Again, when you say that he is the source of the world and the thought, right? No, I mean, it's so fascinating that when you read a discourse like this, You realize that, Swami has given us glimpses of that already.
Yes.
Probably we did not relate to it in this manner.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge lying ahead of us. But this student was saying that apparently they had done a particular Gram Seva or something and come back to Swami's presence. And they had the numbers with them. As you said, we're always trying to impress Swami with whatever little. I think Swami's game it was. He showed that he was getting impressed,
right,
and we were taking that extra step to impress him even further. And that's when Swami would kind of put us in our place once in a while. So this boy, they had made a card with the amount of patients that were served and the livestock which were looked at the veterinary camp and all that. And they got this card with Swami, and they were trying to get up during darshan and tell Swami that, "Swami, you've done this Gram Seva." And Swami was trying to ignore them. Swami was trying to, look behind them. So these people were trying to stuff this card into Swami's hand. And suddenly Swami looked at this one of the students there. And very clearly Swami said, don't talk about it.
Right.
Okay, you do. I'm not saying you don't do, but do and don't talk about it, Swami said. And it was so direct and it was so clear, this person immediately sat down. And he said that I immediately made up in my mind that I will never go forward to Swami and talk about the work we have done.
Right.
He said Swami is very categorically told that do but don't talk about it.
Yes.
So he said from that day he decided that he'll never go ahead with Swami either before a seva or after a seva saying that we would like to do this. And he never used to come. And in fact, that's how we got to know the story. When we asked him to sit with the card, he said, "No, this is what happened and I don't come for cards." So this was an event which happened, and many years later, there was a Gram Seva which was happening, the old students were doing, and they all had gone to this camp early in the morning. So this student had come from Bangalore, so he had come a little late. So he decided that he'll sit in the bhajan hall, attend the bhajans. Swami was coming for morning bhajans then. And after the morning bhajans, he will go and join the camp. Okay, that was what he had planned. And he was sitting in bhajan hall, and Swami came early that day, and he was coming around the bhajan hall, and came to this boy. Okay. And it was the time when the alumni were coming. It's around the alumni meet time. So the hall was empty. So you know the situation. Swami has come early, probably looking for some of the old students. And none of the old students are there because all of them are in the camp. And there's this one old student sitting there. So you know that you're in a situation where you have to get up and explain to Swami that the students have all gone to the camp. Okay? So this thing is running in between his mind. I'm not supposed to talk to Swami about Seva. But I have to tell, the situation is such that. So Swami comes in front of him and almost gives him an opportunity to get up and tell Swami that the seva is going on in this particular village. So he says, "All right, I think I have to say." And he got up and he was explaining to us. He said, "Brothers, believe me, I am not making this up. I couldn't speak a word to Swami." He said, "I just couldn't speak a word. I'm just, he's saying the word is just stuck in my throat and I can literally feel it. It's here and I'm not able to speak it." And Swami patiently stood there for a few seconds, let him feel that discomfort completely. And then Swami just walked away. And he said, when this is what it is, when you say that the words arise from him, if he decides that you shouldn't speak it, you can't speak it.
You cannot.
That's it. really, to look back and believe that Swami gave us glimpses of this. You know, it's there for the understanding. It was there as experiences for us to gather and look back upon.
Yeah, that way, you know, like many times, as you said, no, after reading the scriptures later, that's when at points of time I used to think like, who used to guide them? You know, like now I can grasp the truth, or right, as you know, right. I can get some gleanings of, you know, what is glimpses of what is said. But I used to always wonder, like, how did those sages of yore, how did they get a glimpse into what this divinity is? But it is very clear that it is the grace of the Lord alone that confers.
Absolutely.
If Bhagwan decides, and at that moment you can see reality, it will flash in front of you. Right. That's it.
So, there's nothing more to add to this week's discussion, dear listeners. The time is also up. We'll come back next week for the remaining part of the discourse. Thank you, Hari, for being with us. And of course, he's going to continue to be with us. Thank you, dear listeners, for being with us and through the entire program. Do join us again next week. We offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet with humility and love. In a short while from now, Brother Bishu will be here with this last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Thank you. Happy listening.